Okay. What do you think?
Okay, we'll bring the meeting to order, the Public Safety, Crime Prevention, Policy, and Finance Committee. And Mr. Sparby, you take the role, please.
Chairman Cornish?
Here.
Vice Chairman Woodard?
Here.
Representative Mullery? Representative Doubt?
Here.
Representative Gauthier?
Here.
Representative Grunhagen?
Here.
Representative Hilty? Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kelly?
Here.
Representative Kiefer? Representative Kreisel? Representative Leidiger?
Here.
Representative Mariani? Representative McDonald?
Here.
Representative Moran?
Here.
Representative Nornes?
Here.
Representative Slocum? Representative Smith?
Here.
Okay, thank you. A quorum being present, somebody offer the remove the minutes of February 29th. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move the minutes be approved.
Okay, Representative Smith moves the minutes of February 29th. Any discussion, additions, or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the first order of business, House File 2508. Representative Barrett, are you prepared to present your bill? Representative Barrett, would you like to go first? Okay, the chair will move 2508, House File 2508, be recommended to pass and move to GovOps. Representative Barrett, would you proceed to present your bill however you wish?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today about House File 2508. Just say a few words about it, and then I have a few folks who would like to come down and express their support for the bill. House File 2508 is a bill that attempts to help keep synthetic drugs off, also called designer drugs, off of Minnesota streets and out of their neighborhoods. But before we discuss the details of the bill, I'd like to give you an overview of the problem we have in our country with illegal drugs. There are over 20 million people in the United States who abuse or are dependent on illicit drugs, according to the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Association of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. These drugs include marijuana, cocaine, heroin, hallucinogens, inhalants, and prescription-type psychotherapeutics used non-medically, and their synthetic derivatives. A growing but yet still small segment of the population are synthetic drugs. This problem is increasing in all across the country, where both the federal government and state government are scrambling to find a legislative solution. There are two broad groups of synthetic drug users. There are young people who are experimenting and may not know what these drugs are and what the harmful effects of these drugs are. And there are older drug users who see these synthetic drugs as the ultimate high because of the fact that they are much more powerful. Often these drugs have been called cocaine on steroids. Or these older people are also maybe trying to skirt some other laws that we have in our state. Last year, all of us did good work in passing some major legislation that bans synthetic drugs such as bath salts, K2, spikes, 2CE, that caused the death of one person and the overdose of several more in Blaine, Minnesota. This year, some head shop owners haven't gotten the message we tried to send and are still selling these drugs to our young people, openly flaunting the new law. In the Twin Cities, according to Carol Falkowski, Drug Abuse Strategy Officer of the Minnesota Department of Human Services, the Hennepin Regional Poison Center documented 28 exposures to THC homologs in 2010. That number went up to 149 in 11. There were 5 exposures to bath salts in 2010, which increased to 144 in 2011. The general goal of this legislation is to help stop an emerging problem before it becomes a full-fledged health crisis, like so many other illegal drugs currently are, including methamphetamine. The main goal of the legislation is to get these dangerous drugs off the streets. Some members of law enforcement and prosecutors felt the analog language in last year's bill was too vague, so the bill adds a number of synthetic drugs drug compounds to the Schedule 1 list of illegal drugs. You can find those on pages 1 through 10 of the bill. We did leave the analog language in the bill, as makers of these dangerous drugs are constantly tweaking the chemical formula in their efforts to stay one step ahead of us, and many prosecutors have found that the analog language is very useful. The bill also gives the Board of Pharmacy the ability to use expedited rulemaking to add drugs to Schedule 1. This begins in Section 1, Subdivision 8A, beginning on lines 25.20. This is similar to what we're doing at the federal level, where the DEA has expedited rulemaking ability for our federal government. Although most stores that had previously sold these dangerous drugs pulled them off the shelves and when the legislature made them illegal last year, there are a few shops that refuse to comply because the money they made selling these offset the gross misdemeanor penalty. This bill ups the penalty for sale to a felony. Maybe the threat of prison time will get the message across that we don't want one more death in Minnesota as a result of dangerous drugs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Bear, for your presentation. And just to jump in between you and the next testifier, we would like to introduce in our room today the 9th through 12th grade students from St. Francis Christian School. They are participating in the Minnesota Historical Capital Historic Sites Voice of the People, your role in Minnesota government tour and educational program. Let's give them a hand. Thank you for being here. And sir, if you state your name and title and then begin with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dr. Cody Weiberg. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Pharmacy. The Board of Pharmacy has worked with Representative Barrett, actually Representative Cornish and staff, providing technical assistance on this bill, and the board strongly supports its passage. The board did work with the legislature last year in passing the legislation that Representative Barrett mentioned, and as he mentioned, it has, I think, had a positive impact. I think a lot of the shops that were selling these drugs are no longer selling them. At least they're not listing them on their websites. But as Representative Barrett mentioned, there are a few shop owners who do not seem to have gotten the message. Also, the analog language last year, which is based on federal analog language, has had a positive impact. But there are some prosecutors who would prefer more specific language. So one of the things that is done for particularly the synthetic cannabinoids and the stimulants, the bath salts, is to use an approach that several other states, including North Dakota, have now used, which is to list specific chemical categories that are known to contain synthetic cannabinoids or stimulants, and then to also list the sort of alterations that people try to make to keep the drugs within that category, but to have them no longer specifically listed. And the language would say, as long as the labs, including the BCA, who we work with, can identify that a drug is in one of those chemical categories, it is going to be a synthetic cannabinoid or a synthetic stimulant, and that means that it is going to be automatically a Schedule 1 controlled substance. This removes the necessity for prosecutors to also prove that these drugs are pharmacologically active, as well as being in the same chemical category. Again, the Board of Pharmacy strongly supports this bill. Some folks, including the people that sell it, I think, particularly with the synthetic cannabinoids, like to equate these drugs with marijuana as if they were equivalent. I can assure you they're not. They're far more dangerous. They are, in many cases, far more potent than the active ingredient in marijuana. And in addition to that, these are synthetic substances. They are chemically produced. They're not derived from a plant, which means that someone somewhere is mixing chemicals together. In one case, as reported in the Star Tribune, they tracked this guy down in Missouri who was cooking this stuff up in a trailer house on the back 40. And you can imagine these people do not produce up to Food and Drug Administration standards. That means even though someone is buying the same exact product time after time, they never really know what they're going to get. They don't know how potent it is. They don't know if it's contaminated. So I've likened using these drugs to playing Russian roulette. In Russian roulette, you have a gun. It has a bullet in one chamber. And if you keep pulling the trigger, nothing may happen the first two or three times, but at some point, you're going to die if you keep pulling the trigger. The same thing can happen with these drugs. Even if someone uses a particular brand and thinks they've had a good experience, they don't know if they use it again if they're going to end up in the hospital with the sort of things that these drugs can cause, which is severe agitation, hallucinations, delusions, irregular heartbeat, and coma. So again, the Bork Pharmacy strongly supports passage of this bill.
Okay, Representative Johnson had a question. You have a seat.
Dr. Weiberg, thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Weiberg, to you, I notice on page 26, line 34, that it removes an annual study you do on drug abuse in Minnesota. Is that a good idea to remove that?
Dr. Reiter.
What are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the Board of Pharmacy believes it is. I actually looked this up. This language was originally passed in 1971 when the state of Minnesota created its state version of a Controlled Substances Act. And was really, from language, appears to have been meant to study the implementation of the chapter. Well, it's been 40 years, and I think the chapter is well implemented. If there were to be an annual study, I think it would also have to be much narrower than this is. And I'll have to tell you, the Board of Pharmacy has not done this study, and I don't know how long. I've been with the board for 6 years. We haven't done it, and I found no records of when the last time it was done, because I think it was really meant to see what the effect of this was after first implementation. And but the way that the language is written for the study, it would directs the board to study the implementation of the chapter on the entire language in the chapter of statutes. The Board of Pharmacy's role in this statute is actually minor. Most of the statute involves the criminal law, which the board is not involved in at all. So, you know, we don't have the expertise or resources to study those sort of issues.
Right, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barrett, your next testifier. Is it Mr. Dolish? Would you like to, Director Dolish?
Sure.
That'd work. That's well, what I've got in the list anyway, unless you'd like to change it around.
It's at your preference. I don't think it'll matter. I think we all have something a little bit unique to talk about the bill, and whichever order you prefer is great with me.
And then after Mr. Dolish, I have Sheriff Stanek, Chief Ramsey, Attorney Bumaster, and then Randy Quast.
Wonderful.
Okay, Mr. Dolish.
Chair Cornish, my name is Frank Dolish. I'm the director of the BCA Laboratory. I just wanted to let the committee know that the BCA Lab has been conferring with and working with the Pharmacy Board and Representative Barrett on this bill as technical advisors. And particularly in the area of adding the language that would allow our chemists to be able to testify that new compounds that are going to be, we know will be manufactured in the future, that we could testify about. The old language in the bill that was passed last year, particularly with regard to the synthetic cannabinoids, had language that would require a knowledge of whether or not they are cannabinoid receptors in the brain, that they would act on the brain that way, and we didn't have that kind of expertise. So this language is structured in such a way that our chemists will be able to testify in support of the prosecution of these types of compounds.
Okay, thank you. Members, any questions of Mr. Dolish? If not, Sheriff Stanek, are you ready?
Got a good dance.
Please state your name and title and begin, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Good morning. My name is Rich Danik, Sheriff in Hennepin County. First off, Mr. Chair, members, thank you to Representative Barrett for bringing this legislation forward. It's not easy to keep up with the ever-changing components or compounds of this, to keep on top of it. And Representative Barrett and his district and the folks he's worked with across Minnesota, particularly law enforcement, really appreciate his leadership on this. For the record, the Minnesota Sheriff's Association does support this legislation as well. I'm here today in support of House File 2508. It is, as you know, a second run at attempting to ban synthetic drugs from our communities. Synthetic drug abuse, members, is a growing problem across Minnesota and the nation. A study by the Office of National Drug Control Policy released just this last December estimated that slightly more than 1 in 10 12th graders had used synthetic marijuana, making it the second most frequently used illicit substance after marijuana. And by passing this bill, Mr. Chair, members, you can help law enforcement and our prosecutors protect our communities by sending a clear message that these substances are not safe or legal. And let me talk briefly about what law enforcement is seeing in regards to these substances. Because these drugs are purchased at a local retail shop or on the internet, kids might be more inclined to think that they're safe to use, but clearly they are not. Now, the ingredients that are not listed on the package, they are not regulated by the FDA. Now, members, let me repeat that. They're not listed on the package and not regulated by the FDA. The users don't really know what chemicals are in synthetic marijuana. The packaging states that, caution, use only as directed, and this product is not for human consumption. And that should tell you something right off the bat. I brought with me, Mr. Chair, members, with your permission, a couple samples of what we're talking about. These were seized a case out of Hennepin County. I got two bags, one legal, one illegal. Now, this would be illegal synthetic marijuana. This would be legal synthetic marijuana. Pretty tough to tell the difference from this distance, but I'm going to pass around, provided Representative Grunhagen that you give it back when it's done. Pass it around the table. Let you take a look at that is legal. This is illegal. Can you keep those two straight for me? So take a look at those and see if you can tell the difference. This is an ongoing investigation, which is why the chain of custody and one of my narcotics detectives is here today to keep track of me and what happens with this.
You want a financial deposit?
No, I trust you. You swore an oath. This synthetic marijuana was obtained from a head shop in Rogers, Minnesota, known as Peacemakers. We had these samples analyzed at our crime lab in Hennepin County. And where it was determined that some of the baggies and vials contained the newly illegal chemical JWH250. I think you did that last year, correct? But others had one molecule changed to JWH122 so that it could be legal. And that's what you see in the difference here between the two. And this is what it looks like. These little vials sold under the name of Black Mamba, kind of a bubblegum flavor, a Funky Monkey, that one's a blueberry flavor, and Scorpion King. Now, they're priced anywhere from $10 to $15 for each of those little vials you're going to see in the plastic. People buy these and then they smoke it. Now, that is, members, synthetic marijuana. This is very dangerous stuff. Just last spring, as you know, we had a death in Blaine, Minnesota, from synthetic drugs purchased on the internet. And last year, the Minnesota legislature, Representative Creasel and others, took the first step at addressing this problem with the passage which made the chemical JWH-250 illegal in this state. But if laws are like dams, then criminals are like water. You want me to repeat that again, Mr. Chair?
Please.
If laws are like dams, then criminals are like water. Water's always trying to find a way to get around that dam. I knew you'd appreciate that coming from southern Minnesota. Criminals are always looking for a way to make a profit without caring whether their victims live or die. By changing one molecule on the JWH-250 chemical, the drug pushers can claim that current law cannot touch the sellers of these dangerous drugs. And, in fact, all of these samples that you're seeing have a label on them that states does not contain JWH-250. You know, I've got plenty more in the bag. We seized many of these wrapped up from this head shop out in Rogers. The danger is just as great, though. Users do not know what they're getting, as you heard the doctor testify earlier. Pushers don't know what they're selling, and emergency room doctors don't know what they're treating a patient for when he or she presents themselves at the emergency room. And that is what happened to so many young people who were hospitalized across the country and in this state and in this metro area across the country for the use of synthetic marijuana. Members, we need to broaden the law you passed last year to make it easier to take away the business licenses and bring charges against the pushers who want to peddle these unknown or deadly mixtures to our children. Mr. Chair, members, by passing this bill, you can help law enforcement send a clear message that these substances are not safe or legal in the state of Minnesota. And with that, I'm happy to stand for questions or move on to the testimony. Please remember, I need those back at the end of the hearing.
Intact. Thank you very much, Sheriff Stanek. Any questions for the sheriff? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And Chief Gordon Ramsey, are you with us here? I thought I saw you sitting over there.
Yeah.
Welcome, Chief, and if you'd like to state your name and title again for the record and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Gordon Ramsey. I'm the police chief in Duluth. As you've heard here today, this is a major issue across the state. This just isn't a Duluth issue. However, we have had one particular business in Duluth that has made Duluth ground zero. Received calls from throughout the state from sheriffs and police chiefs asking how we're dealing with our issues up there. One of the things I need to clarify, though, is that this has been called synthetic marijuana. This is nothing like marijuana. This is more similar to LSD. This is some type of vegetable substance that's sprayed with a manufactured drug. It is having a terrible impact on youth and our emergency rooms across the state. Was in a phone conversation with the Department of Health yesterday. We're trying to get accurate numbers on the degree of problem that it is in our emergency rooms. But I know anecdotal information through friends of mine in the ERs that this is having a substantial impact on the ERs and ultimately costing Minnesota taxpayers. In the particular area of Duluth, the head shop that has brought a lot of attention to itself is buying this stuff in bulk and selling it for $5.99 a gram. Marijuana sells for $15 to $50 a gram, so this is fairly inexpensive. And in the drug world, substance availability is everything. It is easy to get. Along with that, we are seeing where people used to panhandle for alcohol for a 40-ounce or 60-ounce bottle of booze. Now they're panhandling for synthetic marijuana. This is bad, bad stuff. It's increased our police calls, increasing hospital visits. The long-term effects we're beginning to see in Duluth on these users, because this has never been tested anywhere before, we're seeing paranoia, we're seeing depression. You look at the line outside of this head shop, which is 75 to 100 people long all day long. Sometimes you'll see preschoolers with the parents. It's a pretty sad scene. The last point I wanted to make was that it's important to make this a felony. It's forfeiturable eligible, and the head shop in Duluth, he's probably going to make $6 million for 2011. That is a lot of money, and because the money that is there, that's driving his sales. Thanks.
Hey, thank you, Chief. And just a second, I think Representative Mariani has got a... Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Barrett. I think you have a good bill here, and we obviously have to deal with this fast-emerging issue. But I have a question for you, Chief, and I pose this as a collegial and friendly question. But so we're talking about enforcement issues here. We're talking about a possible felony here. And yet there continues to be this behavior out there as we continually adjust, you know, our approach. In many cases getting, you know, tougher, you know, with with all sorts of individuals involved in both the possession and sale and use. What else do we need to do, though? Do we need to do something else, or are we going to, like, solve everything by getting simply being tougher, as we're prepared to do with this bill?
Chief Ramsey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, this is possession is a misdemeanor. It's the sales that's a felony. And with the amount of money that's being made by many of these head shops, a misdemeanor simply is not the consequence. It's worth them just to pay the fine or to go through those lines. It's not having an impact. We had a phone conversation with the Department of Health where we are putting a working group together to work on education and to pull all the different elements of players involved to try and put together a plan to work on the education element and to focus on prevention as well.
Representative Barrett, I think, wanted to say something.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mariani. Great question. I think you talked about the prosecution and having a stiffer penalty. That's part of it. Allowing a law that is clear, more clear, so that prosecutors can prosecute is part of it. The communication is extremely important. That's one of the reasons we have so many people coming here to testify, is because we want the communication to get out to various folks, what this is, how bad it is, to moms, to kids, to users. A lot of communication in many things we do in the legislature, and this is a major area we want to communicate. We want to over-communicate how bad these things are. Synthetic marijuana is not marijuana. It's much worse than marijuana, and that's a message we want everyone to know.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the answer, and I still have a teenage son, and so I greatly worry about, as I think any parent should, about the availability of any of these drugs or any of these drugs to our young folks. Where's this stuff coming from? I mean, this looks pretty sophisticated. I mean, there's printing going on here, there's packaging. Where is this stuff all coming from?
Representative Barron?
Sure. I don't sell it myself, so I don't know that I can answer that directly, but it's coming from people who, with the freedoms we have in our country, they use their opportunity to do bad things. They do it in head shops and other background and other basement and other places, much like methamphetamine of a few years ago. We have people who are just doing it. Some people are selling it online. Some of these are coming from outside of the state. There's some things we can do there, but that's kind of an area that we don't have as much influence on as the people who are growing them, for lack of a better word, and selling them in our state. So a lot of them are coming from out of the state. Some are not. But all over. Anyone who has a talent in this area who wants to make some money off some people, impressionable children and other people, in our country, they'll find a way to do it. We're trying to eliminate it as best we can.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems to me that that there's a level of sophistication here. I suspect sort of a cottage industry type of dynamic here, and I want to make sure that whatever we're doing, that we're also powerfully focusing on the source of production. Otherwise, I think we're to continue to use the dam analogy, we're just going to keep sticking our finger in the dam. We really need to be upstream to see where this stuff is coming from.
Very good.
And Representative Goffier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barrett, first of all, thank you for bringing this forward. I have one little disagreement with you. I do think it's a health epidemic. When I talk to people at the hospitals up in Duluth, they're seeing 5-6 people a night. Not knowing how to treat them, because we don't know what's in this stuff. But I have a question for you, Chief Ramsey, if you could just speak a little to it. The head shop you're referring to is on Superior Street, I believe. And I call you periodically about it and say, where are we? But could you speak a little bit to the committee about one of the social effects of this drug being on businesses surrounding the head shop? Could you just inform the committee what people are saying or what's happening there?
Chief Ramsey?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gauthier, that area has been, the businesses in that area, it's been an area of substantial reinvestment. Unfortunately, within the last 8-9 months, the problem has gotten so bad with vomiting, urinating, bizarre behavior, that many businesses in that block are looking at getting out of their leases or selling their buildings. It's had a tremendous impact on the quality of life for the businesses and their customers, to the point where we have weekly meetings to discuss the issues. We hire an officer every day on overtime from certain times of the day to deal with just the issues just within a 200-foot area.
Okay, thank you. Looks like that. All right. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have a question for the sheriff of Duluth. So there's a hair shop on Superior Street that's selling synthetic drugs. And Representative Mariani talked about going upstream. So what are you doing to the business that's selling this drug? And are they still open?
Chief Ramsey. Mr. Chair, Representative, we had done a search warrant there in the fall and have been doing buys out of there. In the fall, there was certain drugs that tested that met the criteria. Since then, he has changed the substances he's selling that has not met the threshold of the current law. And that has been where we are today.
Representative Moran?
I just feel like we got to go upstream. I mean, if he continues to change the formula, and it will happen again, even when we pass this law, there has to be a bottom line here, something that can be done to close this business. Otherwise, it's really impacting the whole community and the business of communities.
I think Representative Barrett wants to answer that.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Representative Moran, great question. We would love to pass a law and have every illegal activity go away, and just doesn't happen. So as you said, I think we're in agreement. We want to stay ahead of these people. Up until last year, we were far behind them. So last year, we got level with them. A lot of people shut their doors. A lot of these head shops said, I'm not going to do it anymore, don't want to do it. There are a few out there that are continuing to change a chemical compound, as you saw in the presentation. Change one thing, and that will make it legal. So if we have to come back every year to add drugs, we will do whatever it takes to stay ahead of these people. Right now, this is our best attempt to stay ahead of what we know now. Working with Dr. Weiberg, head of the Board of Pharmacy, we're consulting on everyone in our state who has knowledge and influence to make sure this law right now is the best we can do today, and we will improve it tomorrow if we need to.
Okay, members. If we could get to the next testifier now, County Attorney Bowmaster, are you here? There he is. You can state your name and your title and then begin, sir.
Mr. Chair, Paul Bowmaster. I'm the Rice County Attorney and the President of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. I am here to support House File 2508 and that it is a further step towards solving some of the issues that have been brought up already today. Some of my colleagues have used the analogy, we're in a 10-foot hole and this gives us a 5-foot ladder. But if we stand at the top rung, we might be able to see it coming to an end. One of the things that have been brought up is that this is a bill that clarifies the language, which prosecutors like clear language as to what it is we are to enforce. I think the first part of this bill does that and goes a long way in solving some of the ambiguity that we find in prosecuting these cases where we've had slight deviations in the formulas used. And I think the next important thing, probably in my mind, the most important thing, is the fast-track ability for the Board of Pharmacy to respond. We have an advantage in being in the middle of the continent here, that when the coast start to see new chemicals coming online or start to see trends, those warning lights go up and we can then start to respond. And hopefully with the fast track ability, we can respond in a way that is quick enough to stop those head shops from saying, ah, I now have a new product I can sell since they took that last one away. This hopefully will deter them from thinking, well, last year this wasn't illegal, so maybe they haven't caught up with me yet. They will have to think, I'm going to have to look at the rules from the Minnesota Pharmaceutical Board to see where this is on the schedule or if it's been scheduled yet. Hopefully we will get ahead of the game by keeping our eyes open for what's happening in the rest of the country. I do think that this is a major step forward in improving our laws here in the state of Minnesota and getting to some of the concerns that have been raised about where are these products coming from. They are coming oftentimes from the coasts, whether that's the Gulf, the West Coast, or the East Coast. This will give us the ability, I hope, to respond quickly. The last part, synthetic drugs aren't the same as marijuana. When people say it's synthetic marijuana, I think it's been said here before. These are simply chemicals being sprayed on organic matter to be burned for consumption. And it doesn't help when we continue to refer to it as synthetic marijuana. These are chemicals, and it could be LSD, it could be whatever the guy in the trailer manufacturing it had on hand at the time. I think by making it a felony to sell, we will get many of those remaining head shops that are trying to be one step ahead of the law with regard to the designer drugs. We'll be able to get them to decide, you know, a felony really does ratchet up the cost of doing business, and it's just not worth it, and I'm not going to do it. So I think it does take a major step in getting the remaining business people to think twice about, is this worth the cost? That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. And Representative Hilty has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bowmaster or Representative Barrett, I think this is a good bill as far as it goes, but realistically, aren't we talking about just driving all of these sales to the internet and not being able to do anything about it anyway?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, you know, you bring up a good point. Certainly these are sold over the internet, just like the millions and millions of drugs that are being sold today or being used today. Some are found on the internet, some are not. We can do some things on the internet. We can work with internet service providers to remove language where possible, and is a part of some jurisdiction within the state. Certainly there are federal laws here, so we want to work with our federal government. I know senators are aware of this issue and are trying to the best they can to get this into federal statute. They've done some of that, but I think some of what you refer to does involve a national strategy for this issue. We will help in whatever way we can, but we do need to work with our folks at the in Washington to accomplish a lot of what you just spoke of.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Representative Barrett, do you feel that there are significant efforts being made at that level, or what's the status of the effort against internet sales?
Representative Barrett.
You know, I think there is. I think more can be done, obviously. If the result of this, I don't think it will be, but if people sell these drugs on the internet, certainly we have a larger issue in that area than we do selling through head shops. So some is being done. Again, this is an emerging health crisis, as Representative Gauthier said, and we need to do more at Washington, certainly. We need to do more with illegal drugs all over, not just synthetic, but natural drugs, to try to do what we can to make sure people understand the risks and to understand the penalties for use and selling of all illegal drugs, including synthetic.
Okay, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so this question is to Mr. Bowmaster?
Bowmaster.
All right. And Representative Barrett, you have a good bill, and I do support it. I've been here long enough, though, maybe too long, and I remember in the 90s we went on quite a binge in this legislature of adding all sorts of new penalties, largely related to drug possession and use and sale, et cetera. And I had a hard time voting for those bills. In fact, I think I probably spent 10 years without casting a single vote on behalf of a criminal justice omnibus bill. Largely because one of the results of those efforts was to increase the income and race disparities of people in the criminal justice system. And you look at our prison population right now, and it's just grossly disparate in terms of you know, not even coming close to reflecting the population of the state of Minnesota. The chief helped me with this answer earlier from Duluth. The bill is focused on sale, so we're not talking about possession. I think a lot of this disparity issue went to possession. But my question, nonetheless, because you know I have to do due diligence and ask the question, all right? And I do support the bill, but it's important to ask this question. And so, Mr. Bowmaster, in your experience as a county attorney, I presume in prosecuting these cases, what can you tell us has been the impact, if any, of our present law that we're amending here and what you would anticipate with this law relative to the issue of exacerbating either income and or race disparities in both prosecution and conviction.
Mr. Chair, I think, as has been pointed out, when we made it a misdemeanor, many businesses chose not to go forward with their sales. Now making it a felony, I think, will drive home to those remaining, as they've been noted as head shops or tobacco shops, that this is not worth the price of doing business, getting a felony. Some have been willing to roll the dice on the misdemeanor. So I think it has had a profound impact on the legitimate businesses that are willing to put those products on their shelves and willing to wonder, when they analyze this, is the molecular structure going to be different enough to avoid prosecution for that felony? So I guess the short answer to the question, Mr. Chair, would be I do think that this would have a impact and that it would take the rest of those individuals who have decided to go forward on selling the synthetic altered chemicals to think twice and possibly get out of the business altogether.
So, Mr. Chair, just to sum up then, in terms of the question of whether we're going to be adding to the income or racial disparities of convictions, it sounds like your answer is, Representative Mariani, I think what we have is a deterrence here. So we may not even get to that threshold. And that's been your experience with the current law?
Is that I think almost every jurisdiction would say the tobacco shops that have a legitimate business in other areas selling tobacco typically chose not to expand their product line because it wasn't worth the risk of being cited for a misdemeanor. So, yes, I do think we are on a deterrent here by making it a felony for those shops that are still expanding their product lines to get around the synthetic drugs that we currently have listed. It's just not going to be worth it to them.
Representative Mullery. Representative Barrett, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mariani. You and I sit together on education reform right next to each other. We've had a lot of conversations about things, and so regarding your first question, I do not think you've been here too long.
Ask right, my now. Wife.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bowmaster, and what? Do you have any other testifiers?
I'm not sure.
You could. Anybody else in support of the bill? Please state your name and title and begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Twyla Braze. I'm president of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. And not to really say anything about the guts and gist of this bill, but I just, in sitting here, heard about the expedited rulemaking. And I looked at this section, and I just want to call your attention to something you're perhaps not thinking about. One is that there are already bills this session to try and let there be less rulemaking out of the bureaucracies without the legislators actually knowing what's going on. Number two is that expedited rulemaking means that essentially nobody can have a say in what the bureaucracy decides to do. There are some distinctions. One is if it's not expedited, you can have 25 letters and get a hearing. They're expedited, there's no letters unless the law specifically says that it allows 100 letters to get a hearing. And a little bit of my concern here is the fact that not only that we just allow an agency to make whatever rules they want without your knowing what they're deciding to do, but on line 2530, it says that the substance has to have no currently accepted medical use in the United States. And while I understand what the plan here is, or, you know, the gist of it is, my question is, what could that possibly mean? And should we not give the public who may have a different idea of what currently acceptable medical practice is in the United States, some opportunity to talk to the to have something to say with public comment or to get a judge if they really disagree. And so the other thing I would say is that anything that has to do with natural health, vitamins, supplements, there are lots of new things coming out, lots of people use them, they're into natural health. And so my concern is just to do expedited rulemaking where nobody has any opportunity whatsoever to say anything about what the agency decides. So I would just like to have there be actual an opportunity for public comment in case the agency is missing something and because, of course, you all don't get a say.
Okay, thank you. This bill will go to GovOps from here and a lot more input. Representative Johnson first. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Last year when we looked at a similar bill, I think we kept the penalty at a gross misdemeanor to avoid a fiscal note, and now with it being a felony, is there a fiscal note forthcoming on it, or where is that at?
Representative Barrett.
Mr. Chair and Representative Johnson, you actually stumped me on that one. We had a conversation about this, and I don't believe there is a fiscal note because it is we are unsure how many folks would actually be prosecuted. We are unsure of the specifics, and correct me if I'm wrong, anyone, Cody? Dr. Weiber can answer that much better than I can. Thank you.
And we did request a fiscal note, but go ahead, Dr. Weiber.
Mr. Chair, Representative, actually two issues. I'd like to address this, but also the previous comment. In terms of the fiscal note, when the Board of Pharmacy engages in the rulemaking process to place a drug in one of the schedules, we're required to check with Minnesota Management and Budget about the fiscal impact. And one of the things that the Board is required to do under the statutes is to align the schedules in the state schedules with the federal schedules. And so we've done that. We've gotten fiscal analyses from Management and Budget. And unless they've changed their analysis, what they have told us in the rulemaking process is that basically it's, yes, there could be a fiscal impact because, yes, there could be more convictions and incarcerations, but it's impossible to predict what that would be. And the reason for that is county prosecutors have some discretion in terms of what they prosecute. So they may focus on these cases, and they may plead out other cases that they might have otherwise prosecuted. And so there's not a way of knowing what the fiscal impact is. So unless they've done something differently, unless Management and Budget is analyzing this differently than they have in the past, I don't believe that there's going to be a fiscal impact. And then just quickly to the previous comment.
If you could, very short. We can't let you comment on every comment that's made at the test.
I know, but just very quickly, I just wanted the committee members to understand that with the expedited rulemaking process, there is, in fact, the ability for the public to have input. The board still has to go through comment periods. The board still has to collect comments. And the board has to consider this in public meetings where people can testify before the board.
Okay, thank you, sir. Representative Smith.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson touched on the fiscal note, and listening to the doctor saying that it's impossible to predict, it may be impossible to predict for the Board of Pharmacy, but Department of Corrections, the judiciary, the guidelines people predict all the time in the form of a fiscal note. And this bill was only introduced 3 days ago. You've requested a fiscal note. I think we should see it. I'm not going to raise any motion or objection, but I'm a little concerned we don't have a note. Anytime, Doctor and Representative, that we create a felony or ratchet up a lesser offense to a felony, there is an expense. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Representative Smith. Representative, anybody else out there? Do you have any other testifiers? No, I'm in support. Why don't we hold off here? We can't go tit for tat every point here.
No, it's a clarification.
Give you about 10-second clarification.
My point in the 100 letters or the 25 letters is that, yes, you can make those comments, but you can't actually get a judge to do anything with the letters. You can make comments, but you can't get a judge to rule on it under expedited rulemaking.
Okay, thank you. Now, in opposition, we have, I believe, Randy Quast from the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, Minnesota. Sir, if you want to state your name and title again for the record and begin. And we'll probably try to keep it to this bill and, you know, the things covered under this bill, if we could.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, fellow committee members, for allowing me to testify at this morning's committee meeting. My name is Randy Quast. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm also the executive director of Minnesota Normal. Minnesota Normal is the statewide affiliate of Normal, which is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Minnesota Normal is a nonprofit Minnesota corporation, and our mission is to repeal Minnesota's cannabis prohibition laws so that responsible adult use is no longer subject to penalty. Even though I work with Minnesota Normal, and I believe that cannabis should be removed completely from Minnesota's Controlled Substances Act, I'm not here today to testify about whether cannabis should be a controlled substance, let alone a Schedule I substance. Rather, I'm here today to testify that by passing bills such as House File 2508 and similar to certain provisions included in last year's omnibus drug bill, House File 57, Minnesota is drastically changing and redefining the entire intent and purpose of Minnesota's Controlled Substances Act, which was modeled after the Uniform Controlled Substances Act of 1994. The Uniform Controlled Substances Act is drafted by the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws, and it was approved and recommended for enactment in all states. Minnesota's Controlled Substances Act, our version of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, has been gradually deviating from the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, which was adopted and approved by our legislature. Minnesota's Controlled Substances Act, as such, is a uniform law. And I respectfully request that this committee take note that uniform laws should comply with Minnesota Statute 645.22, which states that laws uniform with those of other states shall be interpreted and construed to the effect of their general purpose to make uniform the laws of those states which enact them. If House File 2508 is passed into law, it's my opinion that the state of Minnesota will further deviate from the general purpose of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. Within the Uniform Controlled Substances Act, it explains its general purposes as such. It says, to maintain uniformity between the laws of the states and those of the federal government. It was designed to complement federal law and provide an interlocking trellis of federal and state law to enable government at all levels to control more effectively the drug abuse problem. Two, the Uniform Act updates and improves existing state laws and ensures legislative and administrative flexibility to enable states to cope with both present and future drug problems. And three, it recognizes that legitimate use of controlled substances is essential for public health and safety, and the availability of these substances must be assured. Furthermore, there have been significant court cases that have further enumerated the benefits of Minnesota's Controlled Substances Act. I just want to quote a few paragraphs of cases we have in State versus King. It says, in 1971, Minnesota adopted in large part the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. One of the major purposes of this act was to achieve uniformity between the laws of the several states of the federal government. This act, closely patterned after the Federal Narcotic and Dangerous Law Act, has now been adopted by 43 states. As originally enacted, Minnesota Statute 1971 15202, subdivisions 1 through 6, established five schedules that categorize specific controlled substances according to their pharmacological effect. Subdivision 8 empowered the board to determine, the board of pharmacy meaning, to determine what substances should be added or deleted from these schedules in the future, and enumerated the factors the board was required to consider in making its determination. We hold that the legislature intended by subdivisions 8 and 12 to delegate rulemaking authority to the board to revise the statutory schedules enumerating them. We also have, there's a case, State versus Ali, and I'll get to a major point here in one more minute after I just quote a few more paragraphs. It says, Minnesota statutes are similar to controlled substances laws in other jurisdictions because nearly every state, including Minnesota, has adopted a version of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act. Minnesota statute is phrased similarly to those in other jurisdictions, and this court must interpret uniform laws to affect the general purpose of making the laws of the states uniform. The problem that we have here is that there's one other thing. It says the provision of the act allowing periodic review of the control. Here was a case, United States versus Kiffer, and the court states that the provisions of the act allowing periodic review of the control and classification of allegedly dangerous substances creates a sensible mechanism for dealing with a field in which factual claims are conflicting and the state of scientific knowledge is still growing. The question whether a substance belongs in one schedule rather than another clearly calls for fine distinction, but the statutory procedure at least offers the means for producing a thorough factual record upon which to base an informed judgment. But the very existence of the statutory scheme indicates that in dealing with this aspect of the drug problem, Congress intended flexibility and receptivity to the latest scientific information to be the hallmarks of its approach. The Uniform Controlled Substances Act specifies and recommends that each state should designate a person or an agency to administer that act. There's a very good reason for delegating the control and administration of it, act to a person or agency with the proper expertise. It was noted in other cases that, at the outset it should be noted that the area of drug control is one which some form of delegation by the legislature of discretionary authority to an agency is peculiarly necessary. To be effective, a drug control program must be reviewed continuously and adjusted when necessary in light of both new drugs coming on the market and of new knowledge concerning old drug. The legislature, by its nature, has neither the facilities nor the expertise to assume this task. Furthermore, because a legislature is not in continuous session, it cannot give the drug control program constant attention. So they say it should be apparent that the General Assembly is not constantly in session, and therefore, even if members were all trained chemists and pharmacists, which they are not, it's impossible for them to keep abreast of the constantly changing drugs and medications. Anyway, my point to all of this is Minnesota Normal's main objection to parts of this bill is that we are actually, we're taking away, the Minnesota legislature designated our Board of Pharmacy to administer the act, our Controlled Substances Act, subject to the Minnesota Statute Chapter 14, the administrative procedures. My personal opinion is that it was a wise decision on the part of our legislature to appoint the Board of Pharmacy. I mean, what better agency or person than the Board of Pharmacy or a pharmacist? Pharmacists are allied health professionals who practice in pharmacy, the field of health sciences focusing on safe, effective medication use. They are an integrated member of the healthcare team directly involved in patient care. Pharmacists undergo university-level education to understand biochemical mechanism of actions of drugs.
How much you got left?
Okay, I'm at the end.
All right.
But here's the point. With the passage of recent laws, such as House File 57 in May of 2011, and with additional laws, such as 2508, I believe we're undermining the entire intent and purpose of the Controlled Substances Act, and furthermore, it causes confusion, conflicting laws, and I believe a lack of due process. We now have a situation in Minnesota where we have a very elaborate administrative scheme to specifically determine how to schedule a substance in accordance with our adopted controlled substances laws, but yet at the same time, our legislature has legislated that Minnesota citizens are not permitted access to the administrative laws and procedures that are intended and are inherent in the very nature of our Controlled Substances Act. If the Board of Pharmacy under these rules can expeditiously add something to Schedule 1, but once added to Schedule 1, can never review it, can never remove it, can never reschedule it, it's without their authority. So, add as much as you want, as quick as you want to one, but you're no longer allowed to review it or remove it or do anything with it. That was never the intent of the Controlled Substances Act, and that's the case we have in Minnesota.
Okay.
So if a citizen were to question the scheduling of one, there is no recourse other than to somehow sue the state. There is no administrative process. I mean, we there's no place to go to other than to, you know, we're at a loss. The legislature has taken away the administrative process to schedule a Class 1 or to review it.
Thank you, sir. Just a quick question. Probably at the fear of dragging this out too long, but you've told us a lot of things you don't think we should be doing. What are we going to do? This isn't like the 60s where you can throw some homegrown in the blender and dry it and smoke it and not much happens but get a buzz. I mean, we're talking about people spraying some garbage on things and young people frying their brain and, you know, hallucinating and seizures and up in Duluth, obviously, causing quite a problem and loss of business. So what's your solution rather than telling us all the things we shouldn't be doing? What should we do to stop this activity that's going on?
I think that the chemicals should be thoroughly studied and so on rather than to just, I mean, it's kind of an oxymoron. As soon as we put it into a controlled one scheduled prohibited prohibition, we lose all control of it, whatever. It just goes to the black market then. We have no control at all. There's no IDs, there's no setup, so on. I think it should be regulated, taxed, controlled, deal with addiction as a public health issue, not as a law enforcement issue. And anyway, you can get me on a rant here going, but yeah, I believe that that's a better way. Deal with addiction is a public health issue, not law enforcement. So.
Okay, we'll just have to agree to disagree because the route you're taking is going to cause a lot of expense in medical and psychiatric evaluations if we just regulate it and tax it, let whoever wants smoke it. So hopefully we'll find a happy medium in there somewhere to protect the public and protect people's rights. But we have studied this for a year. We've had chemists involved, the Board of Pharmacy. The legislature isn't doing this on its own. We aren't making this decision like you alluded to. We're getting input from experts in thinking about this very carefully. And so hopefully we'll come to a good... Do anybody have questions for the testifier? Or do you want to bring up somebody?
I wanted to bring up...
You done, sir, then?
Yes.
Appreciate it. I hope you realize we gave you all the time you needed. So.
All right.
Wanted to be fair.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, Representative Mueller, I think, wanted to... Oh, Representative Leidiger.
A real quick one, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, can you tell me what that pin is that you're wearing?
It's just a cannabis leaf.
Okay. Thank you.
Represents freedom.
Wasn't sure.
Opposite the gun he's wearing.
Us, that's freedom. Both stands for freedom of oppression. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to ask Mr. Weiberg a couple questions, and in defense of you, that could be argued for freedom, too.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Weiberg, Representative Mueller had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions, Mr. Weiberg. First one, what are you doing to get to the youth? I mean, you're the Board of Pharmacy. You're the ones that have the information on that. without going into a half hour, what have you done, what are you doing to get to youth on this issue? Because that's the real problem, I think.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulry, the board itself isn't directly an agency that works on treatment and prevention. However, one of the previous testifiers mentioned that, I think it was the police chief from Duluth, mentioned that there was a phone call on Wednesday involving a bunch of agencies that would be looking at prevention programs. I would have been on that phone call, except I'm actually in the middle of 3 days of having medical tests done at Mayo. I'm actually having it done right now because I'm wearing a monitor to monitor my heart. So I could literally not be on that phone call. But we are working with the other agencies that do have primary responsibility for prevention and doing what we can on drug abuse in general. We're a little bit more focused on preventing prescription drug abuse, and we are doing some more direct things in that area.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just I would request that you check or contact me. I've been working on these issues on getting youth information on this type of stuff. And for the first time, the new Commissioner of Education has been really helpful on this in the last few months. My second question is, I'm looking at our research analysis of this bill, and it has five major points, and all of them were in my bill last year. What's substantially different from my bill from last year?
Mr. Weber.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulry, this bill does contain provisions that were in your bill last year that did not get passed. The most significant difference here is that the attempt last year to use the federal analog language as a model for how to prevent people from tweaking these molecules, as has been testified to before, has had some impact on legitimate businesses like tobacco shops, but there are some places that just keep selling it. So the main difference is how synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic stimulants are defined. They're defined in a way that I have been told by prosecutors and by the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension will make it easier to prosecute cases. From the Board of Pharmacy's perspective, that's the main thing. The other thing that this does is makes it a increases the penalty for sale to a felony.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Weiberg, I realized last year we couldn't do the felony. That was because of the fiscal note, which we don't have anyhow. It's strange to be doing these in a fiscal committee without fiscal notes, but so basically there's only the one sentence or something or two sentences about that was changed, and I'm trying to think, when we put that bill together, didn't we go with your language instead of Mr. Dolish's, I thought, at the time? Because I remember a discussion about what language we would use on that particular and the analog language. And then there was something, the Senate had gotten their language someplace, you got your language, Mr. Dolish got his language, which basically did this come from now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mulry, actually the new language on the synthetic cannabinoids and stimulants is modeled after what is done in the United Kingdom, and several other states now have since adopted this language, including North Dakota and Kansas, and I don't recall the other ones, but those two states experienced the same problem Minnesota experienced when they tried to deal with this. People tweaked the molecules, they're no longer listed, and they had the issue. So they looked at language that the United Kingdom has put into place, because the UK has been dealing with this for about a decade longer than the US.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just want to make one point, and no more questions. Mr. Chair, everything apparently would have been already law if you passed it out of your committee, my bill, and then it got killed by your leadership. So I hope that since you're now saying that that was good law, I hope you can prevail on your leadership to get it through this year and not just pass it out of your committee again.
We'll work on that. All right. Anybody else? We better move on. We got two more bills. It's getting dubious on the last one here. Anybody else to testify? And seeing none, any questions? If not,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Representative Smith.
I realize you're going to move this bill out of this committee. When you receive the fiscal note on it, I'd like to have it in our packets.
Right. I think we did that with another bill, too. We moved it out, and we said if the fiscal note comes back, we'll bring it back. And okay. And it's House File. The chair would move House File 2508 be recommended to pass and move to GovOps. Any questions? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you for your great bill.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, Representative Gauthier, House File 1719. If you'd like to move your bill and tell us if you have any amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1719 for recommend passage and then refer it over to Judiciary, and I have no amendments.
Okay, thank you, Representative Gauthier. House File 1719 is before us, and go ahead and begin as you wish, sir.
Thank you, members. I'm not going to call it a simple bill because then we're here for another hour. it's pretty straightforward bill. Basically, it adds the word drug and removes the word hazardous under DUI legislation. I'm going to let Officer Morris talk about some of the practical things and obstacles they face, and then we'll have a representative from the County's Association to talk.
Welcome, sir. If you could give your name and title.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Ryan Morris. I am an investigator with the Duluth Police Department, currently assigned to our crash investigation unit, crash reconstructionist, and I'm also a field sobriety testing instructor. So kind of my background in this, and with your permission, I'd like to
go ahead
be about it. Okay.
Thank you.
Also, with your permission, I have some photos here. If you wouldn't mind just passing them around, take a look at them, and kind of details the first case I want to talk about. And this is a case, my interest and passion in this bill kind of came to me in 2009 when I was investigating a crash in Duluth that happened. The circumstances were there was a young female that was driving down one of our main roads in the west end of the city. She ended up crashing into a car that was stopped at a red light, and then she also went off the road, and as you'll see in the photos, went off the road, hit a bakery that's on the corner of a very busy intersection, and actually went to an area where there's a bus stop where normally there's people standing, and we were lucky enough and fortunate enough to not have anybody standing at that intersection to get further injured. The circumstances of this case was that the woman that was driving, she was driving down the road. She was on her way to a Kmart store to purchase another can of Maxell Blastaway, which is the compressed air, the air duster that we typically hear of. She had already air, the air duster that we typically hear of. She had already huffed a can of that, and she was on her way because she was running out. She was driving to Kmart to buy another can. She had a 13-year-old in the car with her, and as she was going down the road, she was passing out behind the wheel. And according to the 13-year-old with the interviews, the 13-year-old, had to keep grabbing onto the wheel to maintain control of the vehicle as it was going down the road. Ultimately, as she approaches this intersection, there's cars stopped at a red light. The car careens off one of the cars that stopped and ends up crashing into the bakery in the corner. And as we know, this woman was passing out behind the wheel because she was physically inhaling this compressed air, which actually is not compressed air. It contains a refrigerant that acts as a propellant, and it's called it's a chemical 1,1 difluoroethane. What I discovered through this case, after she failed field sobriety tests, she was brought in, a drug recognition expert evaluated her and determined her to be under the influence of an inhalant. We took a blood test from her and charged her with DWI under the hazardous substance statute. Fortunately, in this case, there was no trial, She was currently in drug court, and she wanted to get some treatment, so she pled guilty to the crime, and nothing ever happened to it. Through this, I discovered that if we were to actually proceed to trial in this case, we could not have charged her with DWI because the chemical 1,1 difluoroethane is not a prohibited substance under the DWI statute. Obviously, the DWI statute, the spirit of the law is public safety. We don't want people driving impaired. And because this drug did not fall under the definition, it was not prosecutable. That kind of led me to start talking with the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, starting to explore the law itself, and I realized that under the Hazardous Substance Statute, there was a pretty strict guideline of what substances are prohibited, and they kind of fall into the Code of Federal Regulations and has a lot to do with OSHA, and a lot of these substances, such as the air duster, which OSHA is not going to touch because when it's used properly, it's not a hazard. But when it's abused, they don't take that into account, and it causes impairment. And again, that's the spirit of the law. A second case that I've personally dealt with, and these are local cases in Duluth. We had a hit-and-run crash. A guy crashed into the road, then went off the road into a ditch and into a fence. He actually fled the scene. Witnesses saw him walking away carrying a bag with some type of a can in it. Through the investigation of that one, we later determined that he actually had the exact same stuff, this Maxell Blastoff, which is an air duster. And he admitted to huffing the air duster and likely resulted in likely caused the crash. And again, all of these cases are ultimately usually ending in a crash. There was a second case with this individual that happened in another county where he was actually arrested and charged with DWI after he was found to be driving under the influence. He again admitted to inhaling this air duster. Ultimately, when this case went to trial, they found that they could not prosecute this as a DWI, and he was ultimately found guilty of careless driving. So then moving on to another substance, and we talked at length about the synthetic drugs. One final case that I had is when I arrested a driver. He was all over the road, showing all the signs of impairment that a DWI would show. Ran him through field sobriety tests, and he admitted to me that he had not been drinking, he had not been doing any illegal drugs, but he was under the influence of herbal incense or synthetic marijuana is what he called it. He knew that substance was not illegal, and he had fully admitted it to me. Again, this was another case that this driver, who was, in my mind, DWI, was charged with careless driving and was not able to be prosecuted as a DWI because the substance does not fall under the statute. Many of these cases, they're traffic safety cases. My family's out on the road. You guys, all of our families are out on the road, and ultimately the spirit of this law is to keep impaired drivers off the road. I would submit to you that we have local cases, but there are several other throughout the state that fall into the same thing. Crashes that happen, and they're ultimately charged with other offenses, careless driving. There's a woman in Brainerd that was charged 4 times in 4 months, and she was found to be inhaling the compressed air, the dust off, and she was charged with 4 counts of reckless driving. She could not be charged with DWI. So I appreciate your time in letting me come and speak on this. I believe that public safety is our ultimate goal here, and the spirit of this law is to keep our roads safe and keep impaired drivers off the road no matter what they're impaired by. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, sir. Any questions? If not, we would move to the next Representative Mariani.
Yeah, just very quickly, I know we're pressed for time, but the goal, the intent here is to be able to prosecute under DWI. You just gave an example where there was an alternative prosecution conviction having to do with reckless driving. What is the advantage relative to public safety in terms of being able to add a DUI as opposed to simply convicting under reckless driving? Is there a market advantage to us in terms of public safety pursuing that and not the other?
Officer Morris.
Chair Cornish, Representative, I could probably have the prosecutor speak a little more to that, but I guess my own opinion on that is with DWI, I think there's more of a deterrent effect. We also have other sanctions that come along with DWIs, license revocations, vehicle forfeitures, license plate impoundments. We also have the cumulative effect of DWIs. This woman from Brainerd who had 4 instances in 4 months. Theoretically, if you have 4 DWIs in 4 months, that final DWI is going to be a felony. Mm-hmm. So you start to enhance as you have multiple offenses within a period of time. So if we're looking at a careless driving offense, those sanctions, those administrative sanctions, those other deterrents aren't in place. They're just simply, we can go in, we can pay a fine, get some probation for it, and move on and keep doing it. You know, ultimately, we're not making the road safer.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Grothier, your next testifier.
Thank you, sir.
You can state your name and title and begin.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Shane Simons. I'm an assistant Wright County attorney with the Wright County Attorney's Office.
Okay, go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'm here in support of this bill as well, in working with the County Attorneys Association, DWI Ideas Committee, and with Officer Morris. I think it's an important bill. I've had personal experience with difficulty in prosecuting some cases, similar type of fact situations that Officer Morris talked about. I've also had cases in which usually young people are directly inhaling this air duster. They are crashing. In a couple of my cases, I had crashes within about a block of each other, different cases, in very public areas, areas where there are kids everywhere, restaurants, in which a car went over an oncoming lane of traffic and actually crashed into an electrical generator at a Taco Bell, almost hitting a family who was in a car at the drive-thru. Obviously, the situation is very serious, and while this might not form a high percentage of our cases, they're no doubt DWI-type cases, yet the law is preventing us from treating them as such. I wanted to address one of the issues in terms of an advantage of prosecuting as a DWI versus careless or reckless. As Officer Morris said, there's all sorts of administrative consequences, and those are important because we want people to have their license pulled. I mean, that's the theory, until they can fully address their issues and that we can feel that they're a safe person to drive on the roads again. DWIs carry consecutive sentences. If you rack up a couple careless or reckless driving cases, you're going to get credit for time served. You're stuck with 90 days hanging over their head no matter what, unless they've already served one out and then they have a new case. DWIs, as Officer Morris said, are enhanceable. That's a big, big factor in gaining compliance and reducing recidivism. And they involve mandatory chemical assessments. I had a case that was at trial. The judge, understandably, as I was pushing for a hazardous substance charge, the judge, I think, looked at the statute and felt forced to dismiss that charge. Don't blame the judge in that case under the statutory interpretation rules. Judges are forced to construe statutes in favor of a defendant. And so I lost on my argument, and essentially you get left with a careless driving case. Importantly and sadly, we weren't able to fully intervene like we would with the DWI. That particular defendant was just in court 2 days ago after being in court a month ago on a felony marijuana possession case, now felony heroin possession. I always wonder what we could have done had we been able to fully intervene when we caught him using that air duster and essentially crashing his car at that Taco Bell. This bill is supported by the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, by the DWI Task Force, the Chiefs of Police, and the Police and Peace Officers Association. I think that we have that wide and broad support because the bill is necessary, one for the reasons I've already talked about, in terms of enforceability and public safety. Essentially what the bill does, and in many ways it dovetails from the prior discussion on the prior bills, it reduces our need, in fact, even more so, to play catch-up. The idea is, as one legislative staffer told me a few weeks ago on the phone, well, this is really concerning. I mean, high is high. And that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it's really sad, but addicts, and especially young people, will typically find ways to get high if that's what they're looking to do. And in the context of then driving a car, not just the idea of drug possession, but actually driving a car, should it matter what a person's high on if they decide to get behind the wheel? I would argue no, and I think that the whole idea of DWI laws is that it doesn't matter what you're high on. If you knowingly become impaired by it, don't drive. So why have to specifically list all the various substances and try and be as creative as a drug addict can be in getting their product, and simply say, and make it very clear to everyone, you don't have to look at federal OSHA lists and two other Minnesota statutes. You just can't drive when you're impaired. So if you decide to impair yourself with any sort of chemical, whether it's specifically illegal to possess that chemical or not, don't drive. That's what the amendment. That's what this bill would do. Again, I believe that it makes it clear to courts, it makes it clear to the public, and again, when talking about reasonable people, a reasonable person knows you don't get behind the wheel if you're not in condition to drive, and that seems a fair requirement for those of us who are driving, and protects the public safety, and it frankly makes these cases prosecutable, because right now, unfortunately, we don't have all the ammunition we need, and we're not able to intervene the way we need, because this isn't just about punishing people, it is about helping people, because if we don't try and help them through our process, we're going to see them again just like that individual I talked about. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hilty has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Guthrie or Mr. Simons, I'm totally in sympathy with the intent of this bill, but I'm wondering if there's not the potential for some unintended consequences in it. I understand deleting the word hazardous from a statute. That part of the bill makes sense, but on line 1.18, adding a drug, which apparently is defined as basically any medicine, and whether it's a controlled substance or not, wouldn't there be situations in which a person could be under the influence of a drug without having any idea that it had those implications when he or she took it?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hilty, we had several conversations about the word drug and what it meant, and we did, Rebecca did do a lot of research for us on that, neighboring states. Yes, you could get charged under current DWI law if you're impaired, and the best definitions we have, and that's why it's in the bill, is under the influence and impaired. I used to work at a methadone clinic, and I used to get really upset with the Duluth Police Department because they'd stop somebody a block away, you know, because they're under a prescription. But if they were impaired, they needed to be stopped. So we really looked at language, trying to address that as well as we could, and looking at what the courts were saying about that.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Guthrie, the problem that I see is that, and I think what you're talking about in terms of impairment is in paragraph 3, the person is knowingly under the influence of a substance that impairs the person's ability to drive. But paragraph 2, the person is under the influence of a controlled substance or a drug. I mean, if you in current law, you would know whether you were under the you would know whether it was a controlled substance or not. So you would be aware that you were breaking the law, or presumably, whether you're aware of it or not. You know, that's clearly the wrong thing to do. But it seems to me we're talking about any prescription or even over-the-counter drug that it seems rather broad to me, that I can envision a lot of circumstances in which people may or may not be under the influence of a prescription drug, painkillers.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, I'll take a stab at it, and then I'll let Mr. Simons take another stab at it. I believe if I'm huffing I know I'm impaired if I do that. Just like I know if I take three Oxycontins, I'm not supposed to drive. You know, so I think people do know when they're impaired or could be impaired by taking a substance. You know, that's why they're taking them. That's why somebody's huffing gas or oven cleaner or whatnot is to get the high. I think, you know, and I think people are advised, you know, by their physicians, by the pharmacist, by the label on the pill, not to drive. So they do know that it can cause impairment. And I'll just let you answer.
Just a second, I'll jump in. If those people are waiting for the House File 2435, we won't be able to get to that today, but we will schedule it again and hear it, and sorry about the delay. And we should be out here about 5-2, because some of us got a conference to get to, so all right, go ahead.
Mr. Chair.
Take a couple of seconds.
Representative, I understand your concern. That's actually been a big topic in terms of what we've been concerned about as well in the DWI Ideas Committee. But again, I think the Representative Gauthier makes a great point. When you're taking something, whether it's prescribed or even over the counter, if you take it to a degree that you're impaired, for instance, if you take NyQuil, which is over the counter, and you feel the impairment, that's what this bill would cover, and why not, in essence? I mean, we have to at some point, I think, say to people, well, if you're going to put a substance in your body and then you feel the effects and that impairs you, that's covered under DWI. Importantly, the prescription defense is still intact. So if someone gets a prescription for a drug, takes it according to prescription, the presence of that drug in their system is not enough to make them guilty of DWI. You have to show that they're impaired. And so I think that that addresses your concern in that regard. Impairment is still key. And again, people know at the point when they're actually impaired, whether it's too tired, lack of motor functions, things like that, when they take a drug. So that language is very important in terms of restraining how broad this is. Of course, as prosecutors, we're charged with doing justice as well. It's our job to make sure that someone's truly impaired if we're going to charge them with simply being impaired. And there's all sorts of checks and balances built in as well. There's defense attorneys, there's judges who can assess a case from a probable cause standpoint. And so I think in some sense we have to trust that the criminal system, with all its built-in protections and rights, addresses that concern as well. Again, with the prescription defense still intact, I think that this is a reasonable modification of the current law. And knowing, you know, the colleagues that I have and the judges I appear in front of, I don't foresee abuse. We've all got way too much to do to try and force a case where someone's not impaired simply because they took some pill that they needed to take and they're driving just fine. That's my perspective.
Okay, Representative Gauthier.
Yep. Just real quickly, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hilty. I am certainly open to better language as we move this bill along, because I don't want to be having unnecessary arrests and detainments for people who shouldn't be charged. So I'm glad to look at language, and if you have any ideas, let me know, and we can make amendments accordingly.
Okay, members, if there's not any further questions, Representative Gauthier, I've waited to grill you all session, and you brought me too good of a bill. No.
You can still mess with me, Mr. Chair.
Well, I'll get you in judiciary. All right, members, if there's no more questions.
What?
Oh, opposition? Okay, if there's no more questions for the testifiers, Representative Gauthier, would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion for House File 1719 be passed and referred to judiciary.
Okay, seeing no more questions, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? And then the members, if you could take the remaining bill that's in the green folder and put that in your save file here, and save a lot on reproduction costs. What's the number? 2435, the Fusion Center, Minjack. And with that, when were we meet again?
Tuesday, March 6th.
Tuesday, March 6:00. We'll be back. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.